Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour here. Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until 9:30. Hawks pregame comes your way then. Tip at 10 o'clock from Sacktown. We will get back to your calls immediatamente, 404-726-0929. If you're on hold, stay there. You'll be first up. But first, we got to head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Rob Bradford, Odyssey MLB insider. Rob, Falcons fans are as mad as Braves fans were last year, so we're currently dealing with that situation going on my very busy phone lines, but I wanted to have you on. Walt Weiss, we'll start there. Braves do what the Braves do. They keep it in-house. They keep it in the family. In your opinion, was that the right move for the organization?
Yeah, I do, and because I think of what I – and first of all, it's great talking with you. Always a pleasure, and I will say this every single time. My apologies for saying that Jonnu Smith – or not Jonnu Smith, was who was it? Oh, the edge rusher was going to be actually good for the Falcons. So my apologies to everybody in Atlanta.
Oh, Matthew Judon. Yeah, yes.
Matthew Judon. So I missed the mark on that. Like, I missed the mark on a lot of things. But I do think that when managers, you know, I have no problem with experienced guys. I have no problem with running it back, you know, with familiarity. I've seen it work. I think that one of the things that we've seen in Final Fours for the last 3-4 years is that you have had a lot of experienced managers. And I'm not saying that it's been exclusively experienced managers, but you have had a lot of experienced managers. And I think there's something to that. As long as that manager can understand what the strength is, what the weakness is, how to delegate, and a big part of it is also have the other people who are going to be able to go out in the clubhouse and fill in the gaps where they can't fill in. I mean, let's be honest. You know, like Terry Francona, Bruce Bochy, these guys, it's not like they're changing their persona, changing their personality to fit in with the 20-somethings. No, they know what's important. They set the rules, and then they go from there. So I don't have a huge problem with it. I know that people like new. I know that people like to turn things over, especially when things don't go well. And then they also look at these other teams that have the guys just over 30 managing teams, and that's exciting. I get that. But I do think there is something to be said for the skill set that he brings.
They also brought in new pitching coach from the Mets, ironically. They brought in a couple of coaches from the Mets. Jeremy Hefner, who was credited largely with getting that 24 team to the NLCS with, you know, rubber bands and glue, essentially, for a pitching staff. Do you believe in him in that pitching lab that they had over there in New York to translate here in Atlanta?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's the one guy who left the Mets that you talk to everybody who covered the team or was around the team. They were like, wow, that was a surprise. They couldn't understand why they let him go. They understood that they had to turn things over a little bit. But his reputation was pretty good. And on top of it, he's a good guy to talk to. I always love guys who you can actually talk to as human beings and get, you know, where they're coming from or where they're going, all of that. I think with the Mets, their problem really wasn't, I don't think it was with Hefner. I don't think it was with their approach. I think it was with their personnel. I think that they went with the whole idea that we don't have to pay for the stud starters. We don't have to get those guys. We can roll through a bunch of pitchers. We can roll through a bunch of relievers. We can do this and then get to the postseason because we did it the year before, even though a guy like Sean Manaea fell off a cliff at 200 innings. And we saw it. I mean, they were cruising until mid-June, and then it just went 180 degrees. So I do think it was a personnel thing. I think I am a firm believer that you have to get top of the rotation guys and then build off of that. That's not what the Mets were doing.
Speaking of which, the Braves certainly need a starting pitcher or two, as a bunch of their young studs went out last year with injury, and we know Sale and hopefully a rejuvenated Spencer Strider can anchor the rotation. But is a guy, you know, I don't know, is a Dylan Cease a likely option? The Braves, I think they're sixth in payroll right now. I don't know how much of a budget they're going to give Alex, but they do need another quality starter, Rob.
Well, talking to Alex in amongst the recycled air here in Las Vegas, it was clear, as I, you know, I wasn't just to me, it was to others, you know, what the priorities are, right? It was get that pitcher, that reliable pitcher, My sense was it wasn't just going to be sort of a stopgap one-year veteran guy. I think they are looking probably for something along the lines. I don't know if they're going to be able to get Cease, but something along those lines. And then, of course, a shortstop, which is a little trickier and probably would have to come in a trade. But, yeah, I mean, I think that he's very, very high on what Chris Sale is going to do going into next year. But you have to be wary of it. I mean, you just do. I love Chris Sale. I love what he's done for the Braves. I love how he's rejuvenated himself and he was able to come back, actually pitch at the end of the year. But still, like, you can't go into it and say there's no question about it. He's going to make it through a whole year. That's a dangerous game to play. And so, as Scott Boras said numerous times in his very quippy way, Dylan Cease is a perfect guy to, you're going to be able to run him out there over and over and over and again, because there's not a lot of guys in baseball who's pitched as many innings as he has over the last few years.
Talking all things MLB and Braves with our buddy Rob Bradford. Make sure you check out Baseball Isn't Boring, one of the best MLB pods going out there. You mentioned shortstop. I was a little surprised Kim opted out of his deal. It was for a decent amount of money, full season, to prove yourself here in Atlanta after a strong finish. Is he going to get, you know, $75 million in the open market? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that probably what they're looking at is the other options that are out there. I mean, it is so weak. I mean, it really is. So if there was a strong shortstop class in free agency, maybe he does do it. But there really isn't much. And even, like, people will say Bo Bichette, but you know, the more people that I talk to, they say, well, you know, is he a shortstop? Like, is he? Like, he's a really, really good hitter, and he probably can be a really, really good second baseman and third baseman like he was in the World Series. But, you know, I don't know if he's the anchor shortstop. That's the way he's trending. So to come back to it, I think that that's just what the market bared out. And I think if you look at the Braves, what they have to do, I do think that that has to come in a trade. I really do. I mean, if you're identifying that this is a priority for you and your options in the free agent market are what they are, you have to go out and look to fill this gap with a trade.
How much should Ronald Acuna DH next year?
Well, I think he should, because one of the things we desperately try to figure out, like, what we can learn from seasons and especially postseasons. And what we've learned is you got to get guys to the finish line. And sometimes you don't have that option because you're fighting tooth and nail to actually make it to the playoffs. But I got to imagine that if you can get this guy to the finish line in good health, feeling good about himself, as long as you can fill in the other gaps, then do it. I mean, it's the same thing as the catcher position, right? So I think that why not? Why not? It's more pitching for me. Like, if you can get your pitchers to the finish line so that you can actually function in the postseason, great. But when you have the best player, one of the best players in baseball potentially, and you know that you can go on a run, we saw it. I mean, I talked to Seattle guys today, and they were saying, like, okay, what did you learn from the postseason? He's like, you got to have the dudes. Like, we can talk about contact rate, we can talk about home runs, we can talk about all that. But ultimately, it's the Vlad Guerrero Juniors and the Acuna Juniors. Those guys, you got to have the dudes. And you got to have the dudes in the right state of mind and the right health when it counts the most.
Both Cy Young Award winners just announced within the last hour, Tarik Skubal back-to-back, Paul Skenes in the NL, and they both could have new homes this offseason. Who is more likely to be on the move?
Skubal. I don't think Skenes is – I think there's a 0.0 chance he gets moved. You know, I talked to Sherrington yesterday, the Pittsburgh GM, and I said, what's it like to get these calls? And it's like, yeah, I get a lot of calls, but the calls last 1 second, and they consist of me saying, not interested. And somebody said to me, he's like, well, at least there's calls. He's taking the calls. I'm like, well, I take spam calls too. Doesn't mean I'm going to remember them. And so it's. I think that they're going to keep calling and he's going to keep saying no. I don't think there's any semblance of a possibility of him getting traded. Skubal's a little bit more interesting. Skubal is a guy who, you know, obviously it's uncomfortable for Detroit because it doesn't seem like they're remotely close to getting an extension. You get this deep into it, forget about it. I mean, unless you're just going to just make a historic, they have to make a historic run at him. I don't know if they're prepared to do that. And for a team that's trading for him, though, that's the problem, is that you know this is a Juan Soto all over again. He's a Boris guy. He's only going to, you're going to have him for 1 year, and that's going to be it. Are you willing to give up what it's going to take? That's a tricky proposition. And so I don't think either one will get moved, but School will absolutely is the more likely guy, too.
Headline, Dombrowski has, quote, good conversation with Harper. I mean, he's not going anywhere. Harper, like, is he even that desirable at this point in his career? I guess.
No, and they have enough. You know, I think that we went from looking at the Phillies for the majority of the year and saying, what a perfect example of how a clubhouse should be built. What a perfect example of how a team should be built. Look at this. Like, they got it all going. They got their guys, the 30-somethings. They know how to win. This is going to be their year. And then, obviously, at the end of the day, we have all this drama. But I think what Dombrowski understands that there was a foundation there, and Harper was part of it, and a big part of the foundation. He is probably going to lose. I mean, Real Muto, you know, they might lose him. Schwarber, I mean, I can't imagine them losing him. I think they would burn the city down if he left. But, you know, there's always a chance. So I think that what Dombrowski looked at Harper, even with all that chaos, I think he still looked at him as like, hey, you know what? You're still an anchor to what we're doing, because we certainly aren't going to blow this whole thing up.
All right. Before I let you go, unfortunately, I did want to get your opinion on this Guardians pitching situation. I think the most important question to ask is, do you believe these were two isolated incidents?
No, unfortunately, no. I mean, it's hard to think that they are, right? And that's the problem, and that's the tricky part of this whole, this gambling thing has so many layers to it. And really, during the season last year, you know, I talked to enough guys, you know, I talked to Lucas Giolito a few different times about, you know, the threats that he was getting, that the players were getting, how this had just amped up exponentially over the last year. So that's a piece of the puzzle. And then you have that, that when you have players actually doing this sort of thing, everybody's under the microscope. And I will say, you know, Scott Boras was all over the place today, but one thing that they said was should be understood, which is he's right. Like, any time, because of these guys, every time a pitcher like slips out of his hand and throws a ball 55 feet, they're going to be like, oh, did he do that on purpose? Which is unfair to the pitchers, unfair to the players. But this is the avenue that they've opened up. And if the genie is out of the bottle, Major League Baseball doesn't have any desire to put it back in. I mean, you can limit the prop bets, fine. But still, this goes back to even before the gambling was legalized. They had partners with, you know, gambling companies, and they didn't even want to talk about it. But, you know, they were still doing it because they knew that's where the money was. The money's going to keep coming in. The gambling is going to keep going. All you can do is just keep pounding in the heads of the players, say, listen, you look at this guy. Look at what he did. He did basically, I saw someone say this, that he basically did the equivalent of an autograph signing. He ruined his career. He made that much money. So just understand that it's a stupid thing to do.
Rob, great stuff. We'll be checking out Baseball Isn't Boring. We'll talk soon.
Always a pleasure. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. That is Rob Bradford there, Odyssey MLB Insider. Coming up, we'll take your calls, 404-726-0929. Right back to you, Falcons fans. You heard the comments of Raheem Morris today. I think there was a lot of sugarcoating of the situation going on with QB1. What do you feel about this situation, Falcons fans? Back to the phones, 404-726-0929. We'll also hear from Raheem Morris as he sat down with Dukes and Bell. Busy, busy rest of the show coming your way till 9:30. Back to your Falcons calls in just a second. 404-726-0929 is the number to get involved. Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you for about another hour. Coming up, you'll hear Raheem Morris as he joined Dukes and Bell earlier in the afternoon to talk about all things Falcons, and you be the judge for yourself. I'll open up the phone lines again after so you can react to the interview if you haven't heard it in its entirety. But first, this Friday, join the morning shift at Publix in Flowery Branch for a special broadcast. Come on in and pick up your supplies for your weekend football parties and come say hello to Ali, Mike, and Bo as they broadcast live from the store. It's all brought to you by Publix. Feed your fandom, feel the hype this year with Publix. That's the morning shift Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. at the Publix in Flowery Branch. 404-726-0929 is the number to get involved on the Falcons. Trey leads us off. Trey, go ahead.
How you doing, man?
What's up, Trey?
Man, look, I am so fed up with the Falcons. I am a season ticket holder, former college football player. The two things that I see, one, Zach Robinson got to go, bro. Zone right, zone left. It's just too predictable. I mean, I'm calling it out for the fans. The second point is Raheem Morris is a motivator. Too many games are being lost by coaching. You can't continue to motivate and not produce. When the TV commentators keep saying, I don't know what the coach is doing with clock management. Week after week, something's got to give. And the last point I say is the worst part about this, if we are losing to lose at this point, we have no first-round pick. Something's got to give. We can't win three games, have no first-round pick. Give me a Mike McCarthy or somebody. At least his baseball card is going to give me 10 games a year. That's all I got, man. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, great stuff. Thanks for leading it off this segment. 404-726-0929. Can't disagree with anything of what our first caller just said. He was spot on. Zone read to the left, zone read to the right, throw on third down. That's essentially the Falcons' offensive game plan. That's really what it comes down to. As sad a state of affairs as it is, and it's gotten exposed. And Bijan Robinson is not having the season we all hoped he would because of it, directly. Again, I blame this on coaching. This is not a Michael Penix Jr. issue. He needs help, help, help. 404-726-0929, 404-726-0929. Sam is up next. Sam.
Hey, Turtle, how are you?
What's up, Sam?
I'm nothing much. First off, I want to start off by just wanted to apologize for last night. I was out of line. I kind of got a little too my feelings in. Some things went the way they shouldn't have went, so I want to apologize.
Hey, man, we all make mistakes. It's all good. What you got tonight?
All right, what I have tonight is, yeah, I think we're all in the same sentiment. We're sick and tired of this team from top to bottom. And I don't know how you can just see things just building up. And you see Drake London's comments about, I just run the routes they give me. You see Penix's comments today. If Drake London and Michael Penix are saying this, your quarterback and your wide receiver one are saying this, what are the other players saying? This coaching staff is losing the locker room. And one thing about sports, especially in football, when you lose the locker room, heads are more than likely going to roll. It's a matter of when and not a matter of if Arthur Blank wakes up to his mistake and does the right thing. But even then, it's like, where do we go from there? Because we have no first-round pick. We have holes on this roster. Are we sure that Drake London is going to want to re-sign? Is Bijan Robinson going to want to re-sign? So, I mean, do we put them on the trade block if they don't want to re-sign? Like, where do we go? Like,
well, Sam, I'll say this. It's not out of, and I appreciate the call. It's not out of the realm of possibility that Drake London, Oren, do you want to know what the honest truth is? Drake London and Bijan Robinson know one thing in the NFL. You know what that thing is? Losing. That's to Sam's point. They know one thing in the NFL. Losing. They've played for a losing organization. Don't put words in my mouth. Not a loser. A losing organization for their entire career. I know some of y'all would try to do that to me. The Turtle said they're a loser. No. I'm saying that they're a losing franchise, a losing organization. And that's what they've been their entire career. Is there a chance that they want to test the waters and see if the grass is greener? Sure. Winning's important, right? Bijan Robinson and Drake London especially, those are two dudes who care a lot. I know that for a fact. They care a lot. They are not just going to stand idly by and do nothing as they know that their potential Hall of Fame careers go down the drain. That's just not going to happen. GP is up next. GP.
What's going on, Tony?
Yo.
All right, I got like three quick points real quick. All right, so first, you've been saying all night you want to hear Michael Penix say the solution. You okay with him, you know, admitting to his wrongs? I believe Michael Penix can't say a solution, because if he says what he wants to say, it's probably not morally good for the team. Probably going to say, I need a new offensive coordinator, I need a new playbook, I need better players around me. That's not good for him to say. Second, as fans, we have to stop saying this is a talented offense, because it's not. We have three superstars on this team. Two of them play the same position at running back. The other one is Drake London. We have a up-and-down tight end that plays when he wants to play. No wide receiver two, no wide receiver three. Offensive line been banged up. Has not played, you know, even goodish at times. Third thing, Raheem Morris, everybody can't forget. Raheem Morris is never the plan A as head coach for us. He became plan B because we didn't get Belichick, which is probably cool because we dodged the bullet with him too. The thing is, I always said Raheem Morris is a motivator, a player's coach. He was always going to need great coordinators. And this is why I agree with the Orlando Ledbetter, where I believe Raheem will be back next year. He fixed the problem last year with the defense. I know we suck in the run game, stopping the run, but we are good at passing, and Jeff has fixed the pass rush. We're fifth in, like, Tech this year. I say we give him one more chance to try to fix the offensive coordinator position and give him a real offensive coordinator.
But what if let's say, GP, what if they only win two more games the rest of the way? How can you bring him back?
Because it's not a sexy pick at coach out there. There's no Ben Johnson out there. There's no veteran coaches like a Pete Carroll or a Mike Vrabel.
Couple of names right now. Would you take Mike McCarthy over Raheem Morris?
No.
No. He has a Super Bowl in three consecutive 12-win seasons with the Cowboys two years ago.
That's what I'm about to say. He had really, really talented Cowboy teams, and they were bust. I mean, he won off of Aaron Rodgers' arm for that Super Bowl. I don't trust him. But like I say, let's just say Ra, because of the relationship with Mike McDaniels, gives Mike McDaniels to come be offensive coordinator. Mike McDaniels might be a bad offensive, might be a bad head coach, but he's a pretty good offensive coordinator at calling plays. Well, not offensive coordinator. He's pretty good at calling plays. I feel like he would come in with a way better scheme for Michael Penix. Like I said, I think we need to fix up some of the offensive line issues, which is pretty much just get back healthy. And like I say, we need to add to the wide receiver room, and we need a new tight end. But like I said, we don't really have talent in this offense. And like I said, there's no real sexy pick out there for Atlanta to go get as a next head coach. There's not a new, young, up-and-coming offensive talent.
What about Joe Brady?
Not too big on him either. I mean, he's cool. I mean, but they just talking about that they wasn't going to bring Brian Daboll in to, you know, help Buffalo out.
That's just because of the connection there. That's all that is.
I mean, but I'd rather right about now, because like I said, we need continuity. And right about now, like I said, Brian's not a great head coach. He's not an old guy. He's a coaching player and a motivator. He needs great offensive coordinators. Same way with Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn is a motivator. He's a player's coach. When we went to the Super Bowl, who do you have as an offensive coordinator? Kyle Shanahan. You need, if you're not going to be an ex-no guy, you're going to be a motivator and a player's coach. You need great coordinators in the room. I feel the same way about Dan Campbell. Everybody thought Dan Campbell was going to fall off this year with the Lions. Now the Lions aren't playing up to the peak that they were playing with last year, but he was able to still replace what he replaced. And he's standing above water, but you need great offensive coordinators, great defensive coordinators if you're just a motivator.
No, GP, it's a great call, great back and forth. I just got to run because we got to catch a break. But I hear everything you're saying. It's not a one-size-fits-all fix, though. And that's what it comes down to for me. There are problems permeating throughout Flowery Branch right now. It's not just about Raheem. It's not just about Zach. It's not just about Ulbrich. It's about everybody. And if this team doesn't get it together, I don't see how you could bring that same staff back and expect them to turn it around next year. I just don't see it. But great stuff, GP. Appreciate everybody who checked in this segment and has called in all show long. Now, when we get back, we'll let you hear from Raheem Morris exclusively on 92.9 The Game.
It's Dukes and Bell. We've been waiting all day to talk to Coach Raheem Morris, and he is here inside the Ticketmaster Studios. All right, Coach. We got a lot of questions. And we know you guys are out on the grass, and we will get this injury update because we got a lot of guys we need to get caught up on. I want to start first with the message or the messaging after going through this stretch of games for your team with four losses? Mike was just telling me, you know, Coach Brick was just talking about a great day and the attention, the spans of guys. Everybody was alert and practiced really well today. What is the message, and is it the same? Have you changed it? What are you telling your guys as we go through this process of trying to get out of this rut?
So you kind of nailed it. It's never really about, like, the changing of the message, right? What doesn't change is a process, right? You have a process you trust in and you believe in. So, like, within the process, there's always going to be change that needs to be made, and there's always going to be things you need to put emphasis on and do different things and go about yourself. So, like, from everything that you got going on, you just got to figure out, you know, what the problems are. And the last 2 weeks, it's really been third down on offense, right? So we got to figure that out. And then, like, we've constantly battled this battle of stopping the run all year, and it really exploited us this week when it came to us on defense. And we really just played a poor game on special teams when it came to our coverage units. And those are the things that really affected us. And with all that being said, it was a one possession drive in overtime that we lost it in. And it's like, man, these games got a chance to really get out of hand in our favor if we can correct those things and do it the right way. You know, we talked about this a long time ago. We talked about time of possession being a very important part for us. And part of that is not allowing people to run and being able to run the football, which we were, but also converting on third down. So those three major parts, and you don't get two of them, you're going to have a rough day. We didn't make it a rough day. We just made it a loss. And it's one of those things that you had a chance to get out and win. I know you were there. I know you were sitting in that environment, in that atmosphere, and it was special. But your team consistently showed you different things every single week, whether it's the resilience from the New England game or the resilience in this game when something bad goes happen right from the back with a sack, fumble, score, a touchdown. We go down and respond on offense and then make that thing a game and find a way to make it close towards the end and really have a big-time chance to win, particularly on defense at the end of that game with the 3rd-and-21 that ended up being a 4th-and-2 and the 4th-and-2 coming down like it did. And
right.
We could have got out of there. You know, it was one point, I know you thought it was a sack, you thought it was a catch, fumble.
Right.
And like we all did, that we recovered and had a chance to get out of there on that. And there were so many opportunities and so many missed stops that we had that could have been different for us in that game. You know, like it's easy to go back and talk about the 300-yard rushing game, the big plays by Jonathan Taylor, who we knew was a great player. You got to find a way to go slow him down a little bit more than that. And you got to find a way to convert on third down and make us better that way. You know, a lot of Mike Penix took a lot of the heat when it came to some of those third down plays. But realistically, man, you know, he did a lot of really good things to get us in the proper positions, and we let him down a little bit, whether it be coaching, whether it be playing. Across the board, we took turns, and we can't do that. And not to say he was completely dissolved from everything or whatever right. The word is that he was from everything, but he had his part in that too. But, like, the only people that I have to talk after the game, obviously, is our quarterback and me, and he took it hard on himself.
And we know that, individual, everybody's going to – not everyone's going to have a perfect sheet at the end of the day, but some of the mistakes, and it's beyond Michael Penix Jr. He gets the play call from Zach Robinson. He delivers the ball perfectly to Kyle Pitts, which may go for a touchdown. And then later on, Pitts misses an audible. So how disappointed are you in that effort from Kyle? Because to me, that's almost endemic of when things aren't going right for you guys.
You know, it's kind of going it was going in the beginning, that first half, the opposite way for Kyle. It's been going all this year, right? He's been having a great year. He's been catching those balls. Been doing a lot of really good things for us. But, like, when you drop that ball, you miss that audible, we get hit on a zero pressure. You know, those things are all tough. You know, you feel like you go make the right check and get the stuff done, do all the right things, you know, go out there and execute those things. But it's got to be some operational piece that we can have for those guys and be able to get those things done. There's always going to be drops in our game. We know that. You know, there's always going to be missed audibles, but we can't have the disastrous things happen. They give up 6 points
right. After
that missed audible.
So, like, which is such the momentum in
huge.
That building. You take, because Daniel Jones was struggling. He's been struggling the last few games.
Huge.
He's turning it over. That just puts more pressure on the Colts. It changes the narrative of the game. And I know, again, you're not going to call out specific players. We don't expect you to. But the offensive line has been struggling. The offensive line is really struggling right now. And
who was one? Ours?
Yours. It just seems like – or is it simply – the down and distance is dictating what the defense is doing and just getting outmatched.
So I thought we did a nice job on the run game this week. You know, went out there and Bijan was able to get off 80. We ran for about 150 yards. We did a really nice job there. And I wouldn't say we're struggling as far as some of those things. Some of the checks and things that we had, I think the guys played really well up front. You know, I think Hinton stepped in and did a nice job. I thought Chris Lynch going out there and battling through injuries was absolutely phenomenal. We got hit a little bit. We hit once. You know, we didn't. You know, Daniel got hit 7 times. You know, and I think we had 14 pressures or whatever. I can't remember the stats right now. It feels like 3 months ago. But you know, it wouldn't say struggle, but you can always play better, you know, and I just feel like we got to play better around Michael just in general. So I would never, when I think they didn't play well, I told you a couple weeks ago, we misidentified runs and things of that nature or whatever the case may be. It wasn't the case this week. You know, that wasn't the issue at all. Those guys went out and gave a valiant effort. As always, can look, nitpick, and find things, particularly at the end of the game, which you're probably referring to, where they got a sack off a game. no doubt about it. But, like, you would like to be able to go out there and find a way to win that football game. That was very winnable, but I know you felt that way being there.
Coach, I want to talk about Michael Penix for a minute. It's Raheem Morris, guys, visiting with us as he does exclusively here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game each and week here inside the Ticketmaster Studios. After the game on Sunday, I'm in my head and I'm going confidence. Some of those throws I know Mike can make. Matter of fact, I know he can make all of them. He was behind some. He was overthrowing guys. I'm thinking to myself, is there something from a confidence standpoint that's going on with our quarterback right now with the functionality of the offense, which also ties into the third down, inability to convert these third downs? I'm just trying to figure it out. I said, well, I'm going to ask Ra. Is there a confidence situation with our quarterback making the throws that he needs to make right now?
No, it was all-encompassing, what you just said. It was what you're talking about, the missed throws, they came on third down. You know, if we're talking about the missed out throw to Mooney on the sideline, where we're trying to layer over a defender, and the guy's there, and you try to layer it, you put too much in, it goes out of bounds. That leads into frustration. And then you come right back out after that, and you pivot off a thing, you progress across the middle of the field, you throw to Davis Sills, and you don't take your next hitch, and you kind of throw it right behind him. And those frustration things, that was the frustration that he had. It's not a confident thing. What came out as confidence to him was the anger of him knowing that he could make those plays, and he missed them. And that's why he went out and said everything was on him, and he blamed himself. And, it, you know, it, and to the kid's credit, man, like I do nothing but credit his accountability. You know, but at the same time, there was some brilliant throws, which you just mentioned, that we did not make. We did not catch for him. You know, the keeper, the one we talked about earlier, that could have been a touchdown. You know, some of the ones that we made on the sideline, that when you fight through the stuff, and some of the stuff when you make some of the checks, and you got to get those things down. And, like, he did some really good things, and he wants to play better, and he's capable of playing better. The stats may not show that because some of the completion things that I have, but what, because of the drops, because of the missed throws, a couple of the few missed throws that you're talking about, but the fact that he knows he can make those, that's the confidence. The anger and right. Some of the displeasure that he had was because he knows he can make them and he should have made them.
We were talking about Zach Robinson, you know, as a first-time offensive coordinator and the brain power down the hallway, trying to help him when a quarterback is struggling, young quarterback in his 11th game now as a pro, kind of, I'm not saying deconstruct things, but can encourage him to maybe take some yardage. When they play, when he sees some yards in front of him, just go. Look, we're not confusing him with Mike Vick. We just want to see him get some positive yardage, which then helps you avoid those third and longs.
Well, we talked about that a bunch ad nauseum last week, and he made a couple plays, and I know you were there, so right. You talked about the play. He stepped out to the side. He threw it down the field to Drake on a big-time play that would end up being a scramble that was not the design play. He actually did the same thing to Bijan Robinson along the sideline, threw a nice laser to him. Bijan caught it. So he used his legs a little bit. It wasn't the legs that you used to see him running. He used his legs, extended a couple plays, stayed a couple plays down the field. And you like to see him do that as much as possible because he's so athletic and so talented that people don't even know about. So you definitely encourage those things. And, like, that's not a Zach thing. That's a me thing. That's okay. An organizational thing. That's a him thing. That's just a confidence thing. That's growing within the organization. But when you look at the stuff that he's done, when you compare him to all the quarterbacks that's coming to the National Football League, he's right on par with some of the best quarterbacks in our game, you know, in his 10th game, 11th game, whatever it is, as a starter, he's right on par with just about anybody you can just imagine. And we're in the impatient world of want the results right now, and he'll give it to us, and I know he will, and we got the confidence. Well, that's how we know you got the right guys, particularly when he stands up and is accountable as he is about everything.
I heard you with Dave Archer after the game say there were two third downs converted and they had both. And pretty much that was your statement. And I'm sitting there listening to you guys, and I'm going, two third downs?
In the game.
Coach, what's going on with our third downs? What have you guys looked at and analyzed? Because you go back to the Patriots game, I think we were 1-for-10.
Yes.
Then last week, we don't convert any. And I'm like, what? There has to be something going on. Is it play calling? What's the deal? What are you seeing?
It's pretty simple. You know, we got too many third and longs. I think we got the most third longs in the National Football League right now in the last whatever 2 weeks, 3 weeks has been. There's nobody with more third and longs than us. Those things are hard to convert in the National Football League. You got to get third and manageables.
You say long, we're talking about third and six or more?
You can say third and seven or more. You know, just say third and seven or more, or third and eight or more, whatever you want to call it. You got to get manageable third downs, and we have not been able to do that. Now, the difference in this game and the Patriot games, there were spots in those games we went down, didn't even have a third down.
Right.
You know, and it was like when you go down, first, second down, third down, explosive, first, second down, explosive run, got down, score, red zone, touchdown. We had a couple of those drives that kind of wore it down how bad you were on third down, and that's what kept us in the game. You know, if we don't have those drives, you're really talking about some real troubles. You know, but if we can find a way to convert those third downs and get us back into the manageable world where we were early in the season at the 50% range, the 40% range, which is tops in the league, that's where you want to be, and we got to get back to doing that. You know, first 5 weeks of the season, we're pretty good. You know, we haven't been the last couple of weeks, and we got to find a way to get those things done. And it starts with managing the third downs in the areas that you're getting those things in, whether you're talking about 7-plus or 8-plus.
Raheem Morris with us, guys, live inside our Ticketmaster studios at the Branch. There's a cool resource for Michael to work with, and he talked about him working with him from camp and going back to the summer. That's Kirk Cousins. I noticed Kirk kind of sitting by himself on a bench. Do you encourage Kirk to maybe help out the young man? I know Kirk not really happy the kid got drafted in the first place, but there's a way that Kirk can kind of step in and help out.
Kirk's the ultimate teammate. So, like, you know, those guys spend tons of time within the classroom setting, and they're together all the time. You know, on game day, it's kind of like the pitcher. You know, like, nobody really sits next to the quarterback. Matt Ryan, I think in whatever amount of years he played, had one guy left sit next to him, and it was Matt Schaub, right? And that was coaches included, and I was a coach on the offensive side of the ball at that point, too, and I did not like talking to Matt Ryan. He was angry. You know, so like it's kind of a different deal. You know, you can't really look at it that way.
But is he a resource in the building?
He's definitely a resource in the building. He's a resource everywhere, you know, for this young man. And he does a lot of stuff. And he also has, obviously, DJ Williams, his quarterback coach. Obviously, he's got, you know, Zach, who's played the position. You know, obviously, he's got everybody in this building that's willing to help and that's been around the position. They're talking about Zampezi, you know, KJ, TJ. All these guys have had some significant time in the National Football League, some playing, some coaching. But all the resources in the world, and Kirk just a part of it. And he's doing everything he can to help.
What's the confidence in the building? I know it's a silly question for you. It's not for our audience, because everybody's going, lost four in a row, Dukes and Bell. What's the vibe? What's the situation up there at Flowery?
You know, this is the name of the game, right? We're in an entertainment business that deals with adversity, right? And adversity is something that you got to respond to at this wake of life. You know, everybody's not made for this, and you guys know that, and the people in this building are. And that's a lot of credit to the people that's been brought in this building by Terry and, you know, obviously Kyle and Ryan Pace and all those guys and the character, and just talking to Bijan at practice right now and talking to all the guys that's been around and having a chance to sit down with Mooney and Kyle Pitts. And I love the accountability of, like, a Kyle Pitts and what he's able to say to you and to us this year, which is completely different. It's such growth and such development and such everything else around the
country. Taking ownership?
Yeah, taking ownership and just being a part of it and letting you know, man, I made that mistake. I'm clear. Won't happen again. And, like, I see nothing but the growth and development for these guys and these young guys and across the board. It's all over. And then, like, I didn't mean to blow up actually the O-line thing, but the warrior of Chris last week to know what he did in this building last week to get out there and play.
Right.
Lindstrom.
I just went and hugged him after the game.
Right. And Algier got involved. And that's the thing. We were talking about this with Arch on the radio yesterday. I mean, just fans expect you guys to go, all right, I expect you guys. Plan B is plan A. Okay, we got a problem here. Where's plan B? Pivoting, more imagination, more creativity. Can you come up with that to get things turned around? Because, look, this is your butt on the line, 3-6. And by the way, I mean, as a coach, I would think you're saying, look, guys, we got new mousetrap.
Creativity can also be confused with making up stuff.
Okay.
Right? What do good teams do?
You do your you play to your strengths.
Yes. Right? You do what you do best.
Right.
Right? We got to play to our strengths, right? So that means relying on the guys that are really playing well. You know, when Drake London's playing this well and playing at a high level, we got to find a way to get Drake London. We got to find a way to Bijan Robinson to play at a high level, right? That's going to help us move the chains. With that being said, that allows Kyle Pitts to go out there and play his high level again. And then we got to get Mooney going, which Mooney is getting caught up to speed coming off all the stuff, which I love.
Coach, I got to ask you right there. What's the deal? High expectation. Darnell had a great year last year.
No doubt.
One game shy of 1,000 yards.
We know he missed camp. We've been talking about this.
And
I know that played a role. But, Coach, it seems like there's no connection between our quarterback and Darnell Mooney right now.
How would you have one?
I don't know. I'm assuming the practices. I don't know.
Yeah, there's been no practices.
For both of those guys.
You just said it. So, like, you don't make excuses. You never talk about these things. But, like, Mooney, we knew how this would work, right? He came back. He broke his collarbone the first play of training camp.
Right.
First play of training camp, he missed all his time. He came back the second week of the season. That was the first time he actually practiced together. You start working those practices, you knew the first 4 weeks of the season would be like almost a training camp for him. So you're working those things in, you're getting him going, you're really getting his legs back, getting him to run fast, getting him to do all those things. And remember, he had a little small setback there, had the hamstring. he has the hamstring, he misses the 2 weeks or whatever the case may be, really 2 weeks, and then you get him back going again. And then this last week, you start to see him move fast, move around, and then some unfortunate things happen. Like you have a drop right that you never would drop, right? And all those type of things. You know, the timing routes on the sideline are not quite like you want them. And then you have the nerve to ask me why.
Why?
You know why.
Why? Well, no, because
you're smarter than that.
But, well, here's the deal, though. The camp is one thing. Once he's working his way back, the assumption from most Falcon fans is, Coach, he's out there with you guys. Like, he's getting work in. Now, if you're saying he's not and they're not working together and there's practicing and there's a connection on the practice field, even for the little time that he's been available, then I think Falcon fans would understand that. But the perception is, well, hell, he's been out there practicing. Even we know he missed camp.
Yeah, yeah. You're missing this point.
Okay.
Right? Training camp was missed. When you get back, the next point is like training camp. All of those, like, first 4 weeks of that thing, from a form standpoint, those are like training camp for him. So he's working himself back up to being fast. You know, you're talking about you going from not being able to run.
Right.
You know, not being able to practice to now being eased into it. And what does that mean? That means small segments that can possibly grow. But while you're doing that, guess what's being required? Games. Right? There is no rest. There is no time off in games. You got to go out there and fight through it and work through it. Right, so that's what he's been doing the first 4 weeks of the season, which was well expected and well known by us, and what we knew would possibly be the reasons why we would have a slower start. Right, then he catches up and he pulls the hamstring, so now you're back kind of to square zero, like you kind of explained those things. So, like, you know, you're out there practicing, it's still limited, still things is happening, just like we're talking about how you listed, how all the things we got going on out there, and like when he'll get going, he'll get going, and I think. Right. We're close to him getting going, right? Some failure is required to getting guys going. He had a little bit of failure this week when it came to that, you know, drop pass and some of those connections. But, like, I think those are the things you got to work through, those things you got to fight through, you know, Steph Curry style, right? Keep shooting.
Keep shooting. We got to ask you about Carolina before we let you out of here. It's Raheem Morris, guys. I know you're hearing it, or maybe you're not. Payback. Got to get these fools back.
I don't care if you win by 1 point. Just win.
Oh, dude, I don't care either.
Yeah, nobody cares that every week.
Right. I don't care.
But my point is you definitely got to get payback. You know, it's a division rival, right? It's a division team. You know, we don't like them. They don't like us. Now, we got a lot of respect for a lot of people on that side of the ball. Like, I want Super Bowls with, you know, half that team in L.A., right? The whole defensive side, a bunch of guys over there that we know.
The coaching staff.
Coaching staff, players as well, right? There's a bunch of players over there that's over there with those guys. But we don't like them, right? They don't like us. And, like, we got a healthy respect for each other off the field, but on the field, man, we got to go get this win, you know, and they beat us. They beat us down pretty good last time, and it's time to go get a little payback. You're exactly right, and we hold the fan settlement when it comes to that.
I mean, your style is to be loose and cool. Is it for a guy? I mean, you got a four-game losing streak. You seem like, you know, you don't have the weight of the world. So what's your relationship? What's Arthur? I know there's a private conversation with Mr. Blank.
You can know.
But, I mean, if I was you, I'd be running around here like a drill sergeant, screaming.
That's why you don't do what
not
I do.
Your style. But you feel the big picture, and you're in the NFL. If you don't turn this around, you're gone.
It's Captain Sully, right? You land in the airplane.
Yeah, on the river.
On the Hudson, bro.
Right.
Like, what are you talking about, man? Like, your leader's going to go panic, and that's going to change it? No, man. You have a resilient mindset. You get your guys going, and you go out there and you win football games. You know, like that hole right there, what you're talking about, does nothing for nobody, right? It just doesn't. Like, there's got to be a steadiness to the ship that's got to have, it's got to happen now. Like, and there's an urgency for us, right? But there's an urgency that is created that is going to be useful. You know, it can't be non-useful.
On the radio, Carl always makes fun because I always say, do your blanking job. So basically, if all 53 do their blanking job, we turn things around.
There you go.
Pretty simple. Ron, thank you. Appreciate you. Good luck this weekend.
Thanks, guys.
All right, 404-726-0929. Don't you know what on my head and tell me it's raining. That's how that comes off. Whether he understands it or not, he's trying to be Sully, but he's coming off like a guy that doesn't understand the temperature of the room. The room is on fire, Ra. I'm not saying panic. I'm not saying throw your team under the bus. Throw your quarterback under the bus. No, don't do any of that. That is not the solution. But how about providing solutions? How about telling me how you're going to get Michael Penix Jr. going instead of just pouring a giant slop of sugar all over it? It's not fine. Yes, he's a confident quarterback. Yes, you're confident in him. I need solutions, Ra. Solutions. 404-726-0929. You just heard the whole interview. How do you feel? And also, Zach Robinson said something today. Oh, man, it's 9:00. My blood shouldn't be boiling, but it is here on the game.